City Council Work Session, August 20th, 2019.
All right, I'm going to stay awake here. We're going to have a work session for Tuesday, April 20th, so we'll come to order. Are there any public comments, which are limited to 3 minutes? We have wonderful staff here tonight. Thank you for being here. Mike is out of town, and Josie, our city assistant, deputy, if I get the title right? Deputy city manager is here to guide us through the meeting. Mike had a very successful meeting with the EPA chief, federal EPA chief this afternoon, with Senator Sullivan, who was there advocating for us the whole time.
Good.
So he'll give a report on Thursday night. I just talked to him briefly. So, it was worth us going over there and our following up and Senator Sullivan's invite to attend that meeting. It was a one-to-one, so it wasn't just a round table. It was a one-to-one. Okay, let's begin. I had to throw that in because it was such good news today. Good. Update on the fire station location. Josie?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the council. It's been a while since I've been in the hot seat, so I might be a little bit rusty here. Obviously, the project is still in the pre-design phase, and I know you've had several work sessions to discuss location, and in an effort to advance this project forward in the pre-design phase, City Manager and I have been discussing a strategy that would be open and transparent and a credible process that would include the public, the council, fire chief, and staff of the department, and other key city personnel. Two project goals that we've come up with in the pre-design phase that includes site location selection and facility programming to determine the building size and user requirements. So relative to location, we drafted up this this RFP, it's in draft phase, RFP to seek proposals from a landowner or a conglomerate of landowners who are interested in selling property to the city for fair market value for construction of the new fire station. We talked about transparency and being open. You know, the city would publicly ask for prospective landowners for a sufficient amount of information regarding the property to allow the city to come up with a short list to be considered for their sites. And this would be sort of a competitive negotiation process. We put this draft RFP together with the review of the fire chief and also the city engineer. We've got a few details in the introduction about the lot size, and after considering the combination of lots should be 1.5 to 2.5 acres, I think we should probably up that 2.5 acres just to see what we get when we throw it out there and not limit ourselves just to a certain size parcel. And so we are sort of in the same timeline, September, October, November, going through this process of soliciting proposals and at the same time proposing working with an architect during these months on a programming approach that would, again, determine the building and user requirements and establish a total building area and set the scope of work. So we would propose the programming phase to include two council members. We had talked about this at our agenda setting meeting. But two council members to keep engaged in the project, city manager, fire chief, perhaps both fire chiefs, city engineer, and at least, and with your input, anybody else who you feel should be on this ad hoc fire station committee. And so the end result of this programming kind of describes how the finished project will work, how it will function, who will be in the building, what activities are taking place in the building. And just looking back a little bit of history, back in 2004-05, the city did go through this process when the fire department was being considered for to be included in the public safety building and the jail to a degree. The department's grown, the department's, I don't know, Chief could speak better to this, but equipment, you know, is there more equipment storage needs at this point, 15 years later? So what we do is we brush off the old programming and work with an architect to kind of guide us through that process. And based on what land proposals we receive, we would take those properties that were sufficient for the city, kind of place that program on top of the property to see what that would look like. In that phase, I think we would probably, some of them may float to the top as being a better selection than others. Maybe if we pared down the proposals and really dug in and evaluated, you know, did our due diligence on environmental, geotech, anything that we would need to do for site preparation or in preparation for purchasing, that would happen. And so we feel like these two activities can take place at the same time. Just finally wanted to mention that, you know, during that time frame, there will be opportunity for the public to chime in on whatever I don't want to say that because that's a lot to deliver in the next 3 months, but just, you know, talking about whether in a work session or a public meeting, talking about what that looks like and what's going to be included in the new facility. And then after site selection and programming, the city can put out an RFP for architectural and design services. And I just wanted to mention this because I know in the past, maybe, there's been an issue, but the architect completing the programming would not be the architect that would be putting in for design services. And that is really just to avoid the fear of a conflict of interest in right-sizing a building. You know, maybe potentially the appearance or the conflict of creating a bigger facility because their percentage would go up, you know. So really making a fine line between the programming, right-sizing your building, and then going out for full A&E services. We feel that this approach to site selection and facility programming design phase provides an open and transparent process for all, and we would, with your blessing of timeline, activities, and approach, again, we'd anticipate completing this by the end of the year. So just wanted to put that out there and get your input and your ideas.
Okay. Council comments, questions? Evening, Charlie.
Evening.
Sorry.
John?
I don't know, on the RFP, on the second line, it says that we're looking for proposals from landowners in Kodiak. Is it going to be more specific to the city of Kodiak?
Well, we didn't want to limit ourselves. I know councils also had conversations about annexation and certain areas north and south of town. So we didn't want, again, to limit ourselves. But we can, if that's the will of the council.
We have talked about with annexation and maybe not even having one fire station, but two smaller ones, depending on the coverage and process of annexation. Rich?
I'm glad you brought it forward. It's about time. And I would actually like to throw my hat in to be one of the people to be on the committee.
Are there other council members as long as we're doing that, Charlie?
Yeah, I would be interested in serving on the committee.
John, did you have your hand up too?
Well, only for a question.
Or did you have a question?
I had another question. So,
okay.
So when this goes out, I'm just wondering if, you know, somebody who is, because there's certainly potentially more land outside of the current city boundaries, but I'm wondering if somebody, unless they think to call, mm-hmm. is going to say, well, gosh, should I even waste my time? So I'm wondering if there's some way to word this so that it actually solves that issue, that answers that question before somebody asks that. So just expand on the Kodiak definition okay. somehow so that people understand that we're looking looking mm-hmm. beyond the city boundaries
sure.
potentially, so somebody just doesn't disqualify themselves.
Go ahead, Jonathan.
I think the plan was that we had talked about is putting together another page with a map with boundaries around okay. it that we'd provide to proposers.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Any other questions? So Charlie and Rich volunteered for that committee? Okay. Doesn't have to be just two. I would certainly serve on that as well.
It's a great way to keep the council involved without all the formal meetings.
No, and we talked about that at the event side. So, Charlie?
Yeah, I was just going to mention that. Is there, if we could have a caveat on that about hopefully that it would be more within the civil area, because our area of danger would be our, I mean, any place would be, mind you, but more substantially so with the port and the cannery processes, because the further we're away from that locale, the longer it's going to take to get there, and the sooner that fire could go, who knows. But that's just my thought.
Well, that's what the chief has mentioned to us, a big concern about location. So I guess we'll see what we get and go from there. Go ahead, Josie. Did you have something else?
Well, it's just the next step that we felt was was the best strategy to keep the project going.
Okay. Anything else from Council? Terry?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. So this means we can't make a decision on location until after we make a decision on annexation.
We'll see what happens. Annexation is still on the table, but maybe this will spur us even to move faster.
I think it depends.
Go ahead, John.
I think we should just see who responds, first of all.
We just go
weed it
there.
Out that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but annexation is not going to be dropped either. So we've got these projects in front of us that have been talked about for a while. John?
If I understood you correctly, so is there an architect involved in this preliminary phase too?
Correct, yes. And that would come from our legislative grant that we received, the $76,000. Mm-hmm. We have a balance of about $69,000 right now. And we don't anticipate the programming phase, because we've already done quite a bit of it, is to have that come in well under the city manager's authority for professional services.
Okay. Randy.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. If we're talking about, it just, to me, if we're talking about annexation and whatnot, has there been a plan or a thought if we did do two fire stations, how would that look? Has that even been looked at?
We've talked about it briefly at work sessions. an idea out there, but it's just all up in the air. I don't know, other council members might have response to you as well regarding that, but it's something that's come up.
Thank you.
And thinking about annexation and not limiting us to the central location of the city limits. I know Terry's question. Terry, you're on the consolidation committee, so you can push that forward. That let them know that we're remind them we're doing annexation. Trying to do annexation. Charlie?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Mayor. I was just curious if the city were able to acquire the Bertha Pratt lot and a resident on each side of it.
Where is that?
That's right there across from, what's the name of that? Noodles.
Oh.
And there's a minister that lives on the left, and then the people in that little house there. There's two. I was just wondering if that would be adequate space, and then the back of that could still be the parking for the facility down at the park.
Well, let's see what we get with the RFP, and I know we've talked about that a lot. Let's see what we get with the RFP going out there and go from there.
No, I was just wondering if we can do this at RFP first, but then if that doesn't work out, maybe we can pursue those two land, if that is in fact adequate real estate.
We'll see what we get with the RFP and people paying attention. John?
Well, I like the idea of the RFP and having some professional assistance from an architect rather than sort of cherry picking off lots around town that may or may not work. I think I'd at least like to cast a broad net right now and see what's available, and then we can then the staff and the chief and the group can actually then begin to analyze those a little bit better. So I think that's a very programmatic way to go about this. It makes more sense to me.
Carrie?
Well, I agree with what John just said, but at the same time, I know, if I remember correctly, there's at least one lot that the city already owns that's really, really you know, ideal in a lot of most ways. And the fact that the city already owns it, wouldn't have to expend the money to buy a lot like this, is probably going to be pretty heavy weight, I would think. And, you know, I was thinking about what John was saying as well, and we almost have to have a station within a certain distance away from our stuff that burns so easily, like our fuel docks and our cannons, I suppose. So that's going to really...
So, and I think that, I think the council has expressed at work sessions as well, if I remember correctly, that, you know, if there's city property available, and that's what we've been looking at, then that certainly would be the way to go. But let's see what we get and counterpoint it with any city property that we have as well. Might be the best selection, if, yeah, or trade, we could do that. Charlie?
What is, we know, aren't we facing some kind of a deadline for funding? Maybe I was late getting here, but don't we have some matching grants or something that we have to deal with?
For the fire station?
Yeah, I thought we were the same kind of thing.
No, I think just the, what Josie mentioned with the original design money that we had.
Oh, okay.
Is there a deadline for spending that?
No. But, Madam Mayor.
No, go ahead.
The legislative grant, the $69,000 balance that's remaining year after year does become vulnerable if you haven't spent it, and legislators can reappropriate it if it's unspent, essentially. So there is a incentive to continue work on this project to zero out that balance.
So that would be that reversal that the legislature just pulled on that. Is that what we're talking about, that where they have to cause a reversal of the funding in order to save it in that particular account?
No, because it's a legislative appropriation, they have the ability to reappropriate their appropriations year after year. So, for example, I don't know if this was a F-19 or a F-18 legislative grant, but basically they can take all the unspent funds, and they've talked about doing it. I didn't hear anything about it this year, but certainly... it's been talked about to fund pet projects in different regions. But no, there's no deadline. There's no deadline for these funds.
I think that we received some reappropriated money that wasn't spent maybe 2 years ago or so, something like that happened. Yeah, John?
Well, as I was saying, I want to restate what Terry said. I think it's a really good idea, is that whenever we draft a charter for this work group, that to ensure that we don't just consider private property, but also consider city
right.
property. I think it's really critical we don't leave that out.
And I think that was a priority with the council as well. We don't want to have to spend money if we don't have to on the property. Or there could be a trade, as Josie just mentioned as well. Okay, anything else on that topic? All right, let's go to online sales tax update.
Okay, I'm going to lean on Kelly for this one. I'm going to call a lifeline for this one. As council knows, the Alaska Municipal League has been working with its membership to establish an online sales tax program, and both Kelly and the city manager have been actively involved in that formation. So, go ahead.
Good afternoon. So, the last time we actually brought this up was in public comments. We didn't have anything formally on the agenda for you guys to actually ask questions or anything like that. But I do want to back up for a second and kind of remind everybody how this came about, what impacts it's going to have on us as a community, what impacts it's going to have on the state, and how some other people are actually dealing with this. So, common terms, Wayfair versus South Dakota. This went on, it came through, passed down through the Supreme Court back in the spring. When that happened, all of a sudden, we got inundated with new businesses that were collecting sales tax and filing sales tax with us, which is wonderful. I will take your money all day long. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they were always in compliance. It doesn't mean that they were following our exemptions, our rules, and the things that are specific to Kodiak. And when you try to get somebody on the phone at a company like Amazon that has 350,000 employees worldwide, it's a little difficult to get to the right person. So as all of these communities in Alaska were struggling and scrambling, trying to catch up with this decision that came down, the Alaska Municipal League put out some documentation to the municipalities that we actually got through the mayor and through the city manager on how to tackle some of these things. the executive director, Mr. Andreessen, got together with several communities, invited a bunch of people to a conference call back in April. And Mike and I actually joined in that conference call. And in that conference call, we were giving out contact information, and we discussed the statewide initiative for online sales tax, which we are now referring to as remote sellers. With these marketplace facilitators, remote sellers, whether it's by mail or by online, we're trying to come up with a standardized way of kind of dealing with some of the administrative pieces of this. So some of you may or may not know, but in other states in the Lower 48, they have what's called a streamlined sales and use tax. And certain states are member states of streamlined sales and use tax, and they follow a specifically designed set of specific definitions that define certain things. And in the state of Alabama, for example, for the last 10 years, when you file city, county, and state sales tax, you file it with the state of Alabama. They collect it all from people that are collecting and remitting sales tax, and then the states and the counties get their dividend parts. But they all follow, all the cities and counties in Alabama follow the same uniform guidance. So one of the pieces of the Wayfair decision said that you cannot place undue burden on interstate commerce. Alaska has 105 taxing jurisdictions. If you have 105 different sets of rules, they are going to claim interstate commerce burden and by online sales tax. So with these groups that have been set up, we actually met in Anchorage on June 6th with several other municipalities and assemblies, and they came together for all day meetings, and we discussed what is the best way to get this kicked off and running. And what we came up with was an initiative that is a group of everyone that signs on, and you can follow model codes, definitions, and then they have what's called a compact. So out of this meeting, what we decided was that there needed to be two committees set up. One to set up to draft documentation for common definitions to be used throughout all municipalities. You'd be surprised at how many people want to define senior citizen a different way. You would think it's a very simple thing, but in actuality, you've got 15 people that call it something different. And sometimes all it takes is one word. So with that, we have a drafting committee that I'm on. Out of the drafting committee came, well, do we want to have every municipality have to adopt definitions if they change over time? So we decided, no, what we want to do is have them point to these definitions or adopt the definitions that are pertinent to them, and instead have certain language set up in a model sales tax code. So we started drafting pieces of a model code that people would follow. And these things include a lot of the common things that we already have in our current sales tax code, but they're more specific to online retailers and marketplace facilitators, making sure that we capture all of these entities that may now exist through even single parties, third parties, fourth parties that come together through these online marketplaces. So that is actually still in a draft phase. And what that would basically do is it would define how sales taxes are collected and remitted at the what we're calling a commission level, and they would actually collect those taxes from the Amazons, the Etsy's, the Airbnbs, and then turn around and remit the money back to us and follow the same sort of guidelines that we do with our own sales tax collection. Now, another part that came out of this was another committee, which is a governance committee, and that's actually setting up the bylaws and the articles of the entity on the commission itself. So what kind of, how do we want it to look? What rules are they going to have to follow? What board members, how are they going to be determined? Are they going to be voted? Is it going to be based on size of sales tax for your location? So those kinds of questions are being answered at the governance committee, which I'm also looped in on with Mike. So what they have determined at that level is to design something that they're referring to as a compact. That what that compact will do is, from what I can understand, is it will basically work a little bit like JIA and AMLIC. It's going to be a separate entity, have a few separate people, separate softwares, separate budget, and you would sign on to that compact as a member community. There would be a fee schedule associated with that. So, and what they would do is they would make sure that Amazon is complying with Kodiak's sales tax cap, with Kodiak's exemptions. They are properly remitting and collecting sales tax money for Kodiak. So, and then we would get a check. which is wonderful in a lot of sense. So we're still kind of working out the kinks of, if you sign up, do you want them responsible for casting collections and late filing and things like that, which in my personal opinion, I think that you would, is they would be basically your third party administrator of online sales tax and remote sales tax. There are things that we're still trying to work out. For instance, if you have Walmart, and you have Walmart online, and you have Walmart locally, and they're filing two sales tax returns, should they file one, or should they file two? Should they register twice? Are they going to have to talk to two different entities to register? So those types of issues we're still working through, because, like I said, this is still really, really early on. However, it does give us a lot of comfort in the fact of if we are not part of this initiative, if you guys say, no, we don't want to be part of this initiative, we want to go on our own, you run the risk of legally then coming back and stating that you're putting undue burden on interstate commerce. So we would absolutely be going it alone at that point if you decide not to stand up. And then we would have to figure out how to administer it locally with these large corporations. So with that being said, there's a couple of things that have come up that I have questioned, that you guys have questioned, that a lot of other people have questioned. First of all, we have taxing jurisdiction inside the city limits of Kodiak. We do not have taxing jurisdiction outside the city limits of Kodiak. Part of the definitions, believe it or not, is what you call point of taxation and sourcing. It's where that package lands. If it lands in a post office box, and a post office box is sitting inside the city limits of Kodiak, then it's taxable. If it lands at your house and your house is in the flats, then it's not taxable. I have reached out to the U.S. Postmaster General to see if it is a possibility on splitting the zip codes. They referred me to the Postmaster General in Anchorage, and I have reached out to them, which I plan on doing again because I did not get a response. So I'm hoping if I irritate them enough, they will at least respond to me. There are also the question of, when it first came up and Brooks brought forward the ordinances that said 100,000 in sales tax, or I think it was 200 transactions. We questioned if that was too high for Kodiak, because in Amazon sometimes you do have third party sellers. Does that mean it's for Amazon? Does it mean it's for the third party sellers? Does it mean it's for the individual owners of Airbnbs? No. What that actually means is 100,000 gross sales statewide. So even though Anchorage doesn't have a sales tax, they are still included in gross sales statewide. The same thing goes for the number of transactions. It is annual gross sales and annual number of transactions statewide, not just specific to the location where we happen to be standing. There was another, I think there was the zip code, there was the gross sales, there was the taxing jurisdiction. I think those are the big key points, because these are the same things not only that we are facing as a community, but there's a lot of other communities that are facing the same issue. Whereas the municipality may have sales tax, the outlying areas where people live don't always have sales tax in the borough. So there's been a lot of people that have come up with these same problems and these same questions. Another thing that we had talked about is whether or not we're going to be able to keep our sales tax cap and our exemptions. Yes. That software that they plan on having developed is going to be specific enough to where if one of these online merchant retailers says, I'm going to file for Kodiak, and they go in and they're going to be able to select Kodiak, they're going to know that we have a $3,000 sales tax cap, they're going to know that we have certain exemptions that they have to comply by. So we will still be able to follow our own exemptions. And that's why the definitions are so important, because we can actually say, yes, we exempt seniors for sales tax. But the actual exemption and some of the other qualifying information that you have, as far as being a 365-day resident, if you want someone else to come in and sign up with a notary to be able to buy on your behalf, those specific things we can put in the actual exemption language in our own code. So those were some of the large questions that were coming out of all of these meetings. And these are the same concerns that everyone had that we were trying to address first and foremost. So with that being said, we have drafts of the compact. We have drafts of the model code and we have drafts of the definitions. We are still cleaning those up and they are not quite ready, even in a preliminary draft stage, in order to be able to provide you with a copy. As soon as I can do so, I'll be happy to do so. Right now it's still a little early and they're still being developed as we speak. What we are hoping as far as a timeline is concerned is to be able to push forward these drafts in October. That's kind of what we're looking for, October, November. I believe that you have your winter meeting in November.
Mm-hmm. Don't you have any meeting in October again though with this group?
We've been having conference calls once a week.
I thought there was another meeting in October.
I believe so.
October 6th or something like that.
That sounds right. I know that they had talked about having another meeting. I actually haven't seen or spoken to Mike in the last 2 days. So I don't know what happened with your summer meeting last week. So I'm still waiting to.
Yeah, maybe that came up with AML last week.
But I know that I think Mr. Nielsen was going to take a vacation for a couple weeks. And then after he came back, we were going to ramp back up with a lot of these things. So that's sort of the timeline that he had put forth, is to have the drafts available to all of the councils and the assemblies in the fall, October, November timeframe at some point, and then have them ready to adopt, because most of them are going to take ordinances and code changes, so that everything will be ready in January, which is when the sales tax year comes. Well, we still have to get software, develop software, test software, hard, you know, it's still a process, but hopefully having all of the formation documents ready by the first of the year. I think going in, we decided back in June this was going to be a year-long process, because it's a very, very large undertaking, especially when you have so many group people come together and have so many different viewpoints from everything that they tackle. It's been quite extensive in that regard. So with some of those things, I have also been going through our own sales tax code, and it could use a little updating as well. So I'm hopeful that maybe after the audit is done in 6 or 8 weeks, then we can actually move forward with updating some of our own code in the same process and get it all cleaned up. So,
John, you had your hand up.
Thank you, ma'am. A couple of questions. One on the just on the zip code idea. I don't know how far you got with that, but it occurs to me that the 4 digits that come after the 99615, is that contemplated? You could use that as, that could be the identifier of a taxable and non-taxable.
Well, technically, it's supposed to go along with a post office box or a house number, but it doesn't always fall within the same taxing lines, and we're finding out that. Not only that, a lot of these online facilitators, they may take a 4-digit code, but they're not defining that as taxable or non-taxable areas, so it's not being beneficial for our purposes for this. So that's why I thought that I could at least ask if we could get a different zip code for the city versus outside the city, and the worst they could tell me was that, you know.
Did you have
I said one follow-up.
That, okay, that and then was, Charlie and then Terry.
The follow-up is actually more functional, is that how are you receiving, recording online sales tax now? Are you able to separate that out from the regular retail sales tax that you're receiving?
Yeah, and there's really no purpose to it. It's, to us, sales tax is sales tax. We have sales tax that comes in on the sales tax return, and we pop in the sales tax system, and it gets looped in with everything else. You know, roughly you can look and see by certain names and names of certain entities whether or not they are strictly an online retailer or a local business. So you can, I can kind of see, I don't know which ones are kind of which, but there are some that may have online sales components of their businesses right now that have, are still, they still have nexus, not economic nexus, but they have physical nexus inside the city. So they already file taxes. So if Walmart files one return, then I get one return and they don't differentiate between the two. So, and a lot of other retail sellers, you know, they may sell online from their shop downtown, whether it be trinkets or fish or whatever the case may be, and they still file sales tax and they have one return. The only two returns that we have, well, actually we have three returns. One for rentals, because there's a different sales tax cap for rentals. One for all other sales tax, and one for bed tax.
Charlie?
Yeah,
Terry?
I was just curious. What are we putting in escrow some of the funds we're getting right now from the sales tax we're receiving from Amazon? For example,
I know, I'll put that right in the bank.
It was right in the bank.
Yes, sir.
And have you had many complaints about, hey, I live outside the city, and how have you dealt with nobody?
I had that come up 2 years ago, actually. And this was back before South Dakota versus Wayfair even thought about going to the Supreme Court. And that instance is when it was a little different. It was actually a Microsoft customer that was getting taxed outside the city limits. And I went round and round with their people trying to explain to them that, you know, we don't have taxing jurisdiction outside the city. And she told me that the state of Alaska had sales tax and hung up on me. And so I called about four or five different people and got to the right person and finally explained to them. I said, well, you're collecting money on my behalf. Who are you sending it to? He said, I see your point.
Terry, move your hand up, Terry.
I think I remember who it was. So when you were talking, I was thinking, well, they had to do it by zip code. You have to do it by zip code. But I understand the problems there. Is it tough to get a new zip code? If you do get one, how long would it take? And if you can't get a new one, then are there options? Are there ways that other communities have figured this out?
No. I'm hoping that I can explain our case very clearly, because reality is that some of these marketplace facilities have more employees than we have citizens on the island. So, you know, I'm hoping that they are going to see it in my point of view and allow us to do that. I'm thinking that it may take a year if we're successful. If I'm not successful, then we're going to have to hope for the best. And if somebody gets taxed outside the city limits, that they're going to tell me. And then we'll have to deal with it from there. Because at that point, if we go with this statewide commission, and say, for instance, if somebody looks out in the flats and John Smith says, hey, I got taxed out in the flats and I should not be taxed out in the flats. This is where my package was delivered. You can clearly see this. But the beauty of the software that they're developing for us will actually have GIS capabilities and it will know our boundaries. So it's going to know our boundaries, it's going to know our maps. So hopefully that would be the fuel of our plan.
Laura?
Thank you, Dr. Mayor. I do have a question about the zip codes too. I know that some villages already have different zip codes, but I'm sure they still get the mail here in the city, and then the post office puts it on a mail pan to send it to them. So I'd be curious to find out if anyone's actually ever gotten anything sent directly to them, if they've been charged sales tax over the villages. I think it's City Court House.
They may have a separate
I don't know if they
would have a difference. I think the Zinke has been taxed. A couple people from the Zinke have been taxed.
Yeah. So, and a lot of it will come down to that zip code.
Yeah.
You know. The point of taxation is, that's what we're calling this, is sourcing. And if it lands and its final delivery is here, you go pick it up from the post office here, then you have taken possession at that point.
Yep. Just to wrap up, just more of a comment, not a question, but basically any statewide project you're doing is going to take a lot of time, especially with the topic of sales tax. But from what I understand about post office box in my former life is, I mean, I think you would have more success if you focused on having a zip code for just the post office instead of changing different areas. PO boxes, because I think that would create even more confusion probably. But I think, you know, the point of a zip code is a unique number to a very high volume area. I know some regions of our state aren't even in the same area but share the same zip code, because all that volume goes through a facility.
Collection.
In Nome, like Golovin and Diomede or 99705 and or no, 99762, but you know, I think that could be a focus. That way you would capture the people in town in that point of sale. So everybody with a P.O. box would have that zip code, and there wouldn't be a question of...
I'm hopeful that either between trying to get a new zip code and hopefully if I can get someone on the phone, that we can have a detailed conversation about what it would kind of look like and if it were possible. And then combined with the GIS capabilities of the software that they're planning on implementing at the state level. So I'm hopeful that we're not going to have any hiccups there.
Kelly, how many municipalities have been participating with these meetings regarding the sales tax commission?
Let's see, all of the Kenai Peninsula municipalities, including the borough people with the Kenai Peninsula borough, Juneau, Wasilla, Palmer, Ada, us, probably some people I've forgotten. Alaska is another one that I remember being there. There was, we were in one of those huge ballrooms, you know, it was big square, big full, and there were people sitting out in the audience. I would say that there were at least 30 there, if not more.
I'm glad that AML is heading this up, because as the state looks to, as they're doing presently, taking away municipal assistance, and looking for other money as they did this year with the shared fish tax, that AML is setting this up and advocating for the municipalities and holding on to this sales tax, because it's going to be a money grab. The state's going to be looking more and more at other money that they can get, as they've done this year. As we heard at AML last week, it's going to get worse. So I'm glad that you and Mike are participating in this, and Kodiak is as well.
I think that it has a wonderful potential to be not only phenomenal for us as a community, but for the state as a whole. I think it has wonderful potential.
Okay, any other questions, John?
Just a comment about collecting tax, but I think one of the reasons I would support it is it helps level the playing field for our local retailers.
Right.
You know, if they're competing, you know, beyond shipping, they're competing on, an equal footing, then I think it's going to strengthen the people that actually we get the bulk of our sales tax from, or strengthen those businesses. So I'd be encouraged to see that go.
Yeah, and we've had people come before us certainly and complain about that, so it certainly would level the playing field, and it's been out there for quite a while, so it's finally coming to a head. Terry?
Right, I mean, to be completely honest, we have to be, you know, this is a tariff that's being paid by our citizens who buy things online.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that we're, you know, collecting from Amazon. You know, it's coming out of all of our pockets, but as John was saying, our retailers here have to pay a tax, so it's only fair.
Okay, anything else? Okay, thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.
All right, now we have discussed borrowing from the Alaska Clean Water Fund.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is relative to the UV disinfection facility in compliance with the pollution discharge permit. And so I think timing wise, just have a few comments to say. I think the priority was to ask for an exemption or a waiver to construct the facility, secondly to request an extension, and then third be prepared to secure funding to construct by 2023 and be in compliance with our permit. Based on the outcome of Mike's meeting today with Senator Sullivan and the APA chief, I think we'll be learning more. But just as a heads up to council, that we are moving forward kind of in a pre-project questionnaire, just to be prepared in the event that the first two options are not an option and that we need to comply. So I think we've had internal discussions with finance and engineering and public works about how that might work. And so I think maybe premature to be talking about right now, especially given the developments with the EPA. So with that, I just defer to maybe to a future meeting or take any questions.
Yeah, I think with Mike coming back and he flies in tomorrow morning, and we'll be discussing this further with the options and negotiations that he planted with the EPA chief and others, and the state commissioner as well. So we'll find out more about this, and we have talked about this, so hopefully some things will change. Any other comments or questions on that? Okay, let's go to the training and travel request with our clerk.
Are we having coffee?
Did I miss something?
No, that's not the five.
Elected official, training and travel.
Oh, yep. I thought that was last.
We're more tired than I
So I do not have any other questions, or I don't have anything to report about training. The next one would be the AML, which is not until November, so we have a few more weeks to go. I did receive, I'm going to take this opportunity to run this by the council. We have received this letter, and it's from the Kodiak History Museum. The museums, Alaska and the Alaska Historical Society, in connection with the Kodiak Historical Society, will be hosting a joint conference on September 25 to 28, 2019. And they're asking for sponsorship, and there's 100 for general sponsor, 250 to 1,000, and then 2,500 for lunch sponsor, and then 5,000 for event sponsor. And I looked up the budget, and there's 8,300 in the community promotion. So I was just wondering if the council would be interested in.
So this is the statewide museum association. I guess that's what it's called. Is that what it's called? That's coming to Kodiak for their big meetings. And I would suggest to the council to think about, what do we, do you know what we do in supporting for Swampsea, something like that? What do we pay? Does anyone remember? Do you know, Nova?
I don't.
Would it be something that we could do comparably to what we do for Swampsea? I don't know what it is that we do. Charlie, do you remember?
Yeah, no, I don't, Madam Mayor.
Okay.
I sure don't. Because I don't think I was that active in Swampsea at that time.
It's like 2,500.
Yeah, I want to say between 2,000 and 3,000.
Yeah, it's true. 3,000.
It's pretty lower levels, but it's.
So, what do you get for $1,000 on that? Does it say,
Jeremy? You get noticed in the conference program.
So, how about that? $1,000. Go ahead, John.
Well, before we sign on that, what other things like Coast Guard appreciation or others do we sponsor? So, I can get an idea of. What are the money we might need to allocate before we can throw a random number at them?
I don't know that we sponsor much of anything else besides Swansea. And
I looked up the account. I know that there's 8,300 there. I know that there's $2,000 that's undesignated. And I think that's the funding that you tap into if there's a reception here in Kodiak, let's say for North Pacific Fishery Management.
Yeah, sometimes we share that with the chamber and the borough.
How soon do we have to decide on this?
There's a date on the back of that form.
September 1st.
September 1st.
Oh, so right away.
Yeah, and so the Coast Guard appreciation, that's something that's done through the chamber. I don't know that we sponsor anything but them with that, because they have
other events, so just so I know how to allocate that money. Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess we could find out, but go ahead. Terry, then Charlie.
Well, we didn't used to have the capacity to have a lot of these conferences, because if they had over a certain amount of people, we didn't have the hotel capacity, we didn't have anything like our convention center. But now that we do, and that was kind of an investment that's made. And if the more conferences we get, it's just more business for all our businesses. But I think maybe John's making a good point. If he had kind of a standard for a conference coming to town, I mean, they're going to bring different amounts of people. But I mean, I think it's a good policy to support these conferences.
It's not always that we're asked to support different conferences. The tie-in here is because it's the History Museum and we own the building and give them a lot of money every year. So it's not every conference that asks us, so that there's a connection to the city. I understand what you're saying, but anyway. Charlie?
Just thinking on here. I like the idea of supporting these conferences, and the fact that it's a historical society, you're getting entrance into all these other communities. And I would like to see us sponsor a luncheon for them, being that we could maybe round up some fish from our processors to limit the cost of the factor, because I would really like to show these people what Kodiak is all about, with our friendliness and our generosity. And I don't know, maybe the rest of the council might feel that's too expensive, but $2,500, I think that would bide well for the publicity and the afterthought that these people would be taken up with them.
So what's the deadline on this, Nova?
September 1st.
Oh, September 1st.
Yeah.
So it's right around the corner. So what you're wanting to, or at least John wanting to know what other sponsorships we have done, I don't know when you would, I mean, I guess we could do this and send it out by email and find out. I don't think we have a lot of sponsorship. That's what I remember. But we can check and see, but something's coming up to be decided on fairly soon with this deadline. And I don't really want to get into setting a policy of anything right now. We just need to decide if you want to sponsor this and at what degree. John?
Well, I was wondering if you can get the information back just by Thursday, and then we can individually respond by email before the first. But you know, the only policy I would say is I would like to have some people with more advanced notice for randomly, even if it's only a small amount of money, but so we randomly assign money to an event without knowing what other events we have sponsored in the past. It's because we don't have that so much money in the budget. So
sure.
Just to be a little bit more cautious.
Well, we can get that information by Thursday. Oh, Kelly might have that answer for us. Here we go.
You have about $4,000 that you budget every year for these types of things. And one is the Coast Guard Appreciation Dinner. And there are other few small sponsorships that you do that are $200, $400. But it's about $4,000, if I remember correctly, for your sponsorships in your budget.
For FY20?
Yes, ma'am.
So I think it's best if we just have that. I didn't know we sponsored Coast Guard.
I believe it's on the list that's on the budget.
You think so, John?
Yeah.
Okay, so if we have that list coming to us like tomorrow, and then we could look at that and decide by Thursday or at least by the end of the week, and then we can go from there. Is that agreeable?
Sure.
To see what we have, knowing that that's how much we have?
I believe so.
Okay, and maybe at the same time we get the list of the sponsors that we normally do for like an FY19. We can have that $4,000 in front of us as well, so then we can see how it's allocated. Or you
and
might want to
I apologize that I was not able to present this. We got this on August 16th.
Yeah, we just got it, so yeah. It's pretty quick on their part, too.
Yeah, thank you, ma'am. I just wanted to add that not all conferences are equal, and some are more important than others. And I think that's why we need to determine the importance of them by individually, rather than a conference policy.
Yeah, well, we can see what we've done in the past and then see how you want to allocate this. And then when we send out the information of the past sponsorships, let's send the information out of the different categories and amounts of this particular conference as well, and we can decide from there, knowing that we have $4,000 for the year and how we spent it last year. Did we spend all of it last year?
Certainly probably did.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll find out. Okay, is that agreeable with everybody? We'll go from there. Okay?
Sounds good.
Okay, anything else, Nova? That's it? Do we need a break? We can go forward with the packet, I guess?
Go forward.
Go forward.
Okay, go forward. Okay, so we have the meeting on Thursday night. We have a proclamation for a library card sign-up month. Anyone wanting to read that in particular? Library? Randy? Okay. Public hearing on the retail marijuana store license renewal. This is something we have as a resolution.
Correct.
Josie?
Yeah, thank you. This shows up twice on the agenda, under public hearing and then again under new business. In your packet on page 33, there was a question about a notice of violation with Hi-Rise regarding a, so we inquired, the clerk inquired today to the marijuana board, and basically just to explain to you, because a question was asked about the violation, that so the board has not taken any action as a result of this notice of violation. And according to Jedediah Smith, the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, this is a fairly common type of violation in the inventory control system. Mm-hmm. And their enforcement chief told Mr. Smith that this particular error was self-reported and by the licensee. So he made the statement that it was unlikely any further action would be taken on this matter, and just wanted to share that with the council to clear that up, since the question was out there.
Curie?
What exactly was the error?
On page 33 of your council packet, there is a notice of violation that was self-reported by the licensee.
And then the response that was
given. We don't know what the violation was.
It was with regard to inventory control.
It's on page 34 of your packet, the explanation of the violation.
Sure, no.
By the owner. It's pretty well explained there. Any questions on that?
It's just a common error or mistake.
Yeah. Terry, did you have any other question on that?
No.
Okay.
And he brought it forward himself, which is
yeah.
He's self-reporting.
And then we have unfinished business, which is the second reading and public hearing on the code on council members' non-attendance when on city business, page 11. Nancy.
Oh, this was promulgated by the council to address your rules of attendance, and. So in response, this ordinance was drafted and we're in second reading public hearing.
Is there any comment or question on that? Okay, then we go to new business, the resolution for appropriating $5,000 from the sewer utility operating fund. Josie?
Thank you. This is for the pumper truck. We talked about it at the last work session, or the flusher truck, sorry, that was approved in the 2020 budget.
Okay, any comment or question on that? And then we have, this came before us before as well, on the appraisals, page 21.
Correct. This is a resolution to approve funding for land appraisals for Trident Basin, Pillar Mountain, and the shipyard.
And we had talked about that before.
Yeah.
Any questions or comments on that?
Yeah.
And then the retail marijuana store license renewal application. This is due for every year they have to do that. Is that correct? Is that correct, Melvin?
Correct.
So did you have anything else on that? Council members, questions? All right. And then the bid award for a bunch of vehicles from Kodiak Motors. Page 40.
So we put out a request for proposals. We received one response from Kodiak Motors for three half-ton cab pickup trucks for $28,392 each, one and a half-ton chassis four-wheel drive pickup truck that we did not receive a quote on because they're not available at this time, and for one small SUV for $23,270. Just as a part of due diligence, compared these prices to the state's small fleet vehicle purchasing program, and these all prices were all underneath, included with the 10% discount for local preference.
Wow.
Yeah.
Questions or comments? Charlie?
Is this the FOB Kodiak, all these?
Yes.
Any other questions, comments? All right, then the final item is to authorize the purchase police vehicle from Alaska Sales and Service with some special stuff.
Thank you. This was a budgeted amount in the F20 budget and went out for a similar request or proposals, and I think due to the specialized nature of the police vehicles, this was kind of packaged in that way for lights and all the other extra equipment, radios in the vehicles.
Okay, questions, comments? Okay, Any council member have anything else? Or Josie or Nova?
I have changed my phone number.
Yes.
And I emailed the council my phone number and also distributed the business card.
Anything else?
Thank you.
Okay, we'll see you Thursday night.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.